السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. الحمد لله الحمد لله وكفى وسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى. أما بعد، اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. My apologies, we're having a little bit of difficulty with the broadcast, but inshallah it should be working now. So today I wanted to share actually a very short message, and it actually concerns one of the strategies that we can employ to try to deter ourselves from sin. You know, there's many different types of sins. There are sins that are done publicly, sins that are done privately, sins that are one-offs, sins that are cyclical in nature. But the general pathway to sin tends to be recurrent, in the sense that, you know, usually there's a prompting, and sometimes it's the nafs that will prompt the individual, and sometimes it's shaitan that will prompt the individual. When the nafs prompts the individual, the voice is typically very persistent and constant. And when it's shaitan, then it's shaitan comes from many different angles. But regardless, there's a prompting that initially starts, and then it's the person's choice whether or not they want to listen to the prompting and allow it to, or cultivate that prompting and allow it to grow, or they deny it and nip it in the bud. And one of the mistakes that people make is that sometimes they let it go for too long, meaning they don't cut it out right at the initial stage. And what happens is there's a building pressure that develops. And then it gets to the point which is, we would call the point of no return. It's like the event horizons. When you pass that, it's very, very unlikely that a person is able to hold themselves back from the sin. And this is pretty much applicable to, you know, any type of sin. You know, we realize that that there are different windows to the heart, which include, for example, the eyes are one window to the heart, but they're not the only window to the heart. The hands and the limbs are another window to the heart. The tongue, for example, is a window to the heart. The ears are a window to the heart. And the idea is that the prompting will typically involve one of these windows. And what a person has to do is they have to be very careful that they keep these windows sealed and insulated. If you open it up a crack, then the wind of sin will rush in with such force that it will push the rest of the window open. It's as if the whole house is already drowning underwater and there's so much pressure. If a person's in that situation, you know, it's their job to keep each one of those windows closed as tightly as possible so that nothing gets in. And typically when we think about sin and avoiding sin, right, we do talk about, you know, a person is usually caught up in the actual act of the sin. And what I wanted to focus on today in the few minutes that we had was not really about the sin itself, but the afterthought, or what happens at the aftermath of the sin. This is something that people don't typically reflect upon. And this is a very powerful method to convince a person, to deter a person from engaging in the sins or the demons that they have in their closet. And what that means is that, you know, when a person, you know, has a prompting and the pressure starts to build, right, and there's this push, there's this, you know, prompt to actually do it, and this drive to do it, and it gets stronger and stronger and stronger, then a person should take a step back and think and play out in their mind, what will happen if I do this, right? And so you walk out in your mind that, okay, I do this, I open the computer, I go to that particular web page, I want to see X, Y, and Z, and walk it all the way to the end. And walk it all the way to the end, and what's going to happen on the other side. And, you know, unfortunately, many of the sins and demons that we face are things that we already have tajruba with, or that we have experience with. But it's not always the case. So for example, if a person has a problem with their gaze, they know what they feel like after having committed the sin, but we forget. And this is the time to remind the person to remind themselves that, look, you know, when I finished committing the sin and I looked at something that I shouldn't have looked at, how did I feel? And remember the remorse, remember the regret, remember the lack of satisfaction. And this is one of the interesting things about sin, is people feel that, you know, sin is somehow satisfying. But if you are really satisfied, then it should really satisfy you. That means, no, if a person's hungry and they eat, then they should no longer be hungry. But you don't find that scenario with sin. All it does is relieves that buildup of pressure. Because what happens is after you're done, you're not satisfied. Actually, you're actually dissatisfied. You're dissatisfied about yourself. You're dissatisfied that we disobeyed Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We're dissatisfied that we didn't have the self-control to do what we should have. We're dissatisfied that we've, you know, let our teachers down. We're dissatisfied from every aspect. So that's not something which is fulfilling. It's actually very anticlimactic. And that's the nature of sin in general. And this is the amazing hikmah of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Inna Allah kana aliman hakima. That he knows exactly what is what, and therefore he designs a sharia that reflects that reality. And the things that he asks us to stay away from, those are actually for our own good. If we actually stay away from those things, we are the first people who will benefit. Now, most people, when they succumb because the pressure gets just too much. Now, we said one way to take care of that is to nip it in the bud. But if you don't, and that pressure keeps on mounting until it reaches a head, just know that if you can ride it out for a certain period of time, then that pressure actually goes away. That's the natural, it doesn't just stay like that forever. And this happens if a person has, you know, a desire of intimate nature. It applies across the board. For something as trivial, for example, as say that a person wants to make, a sarcastic joke, or they want to do riba of something, or they have some really juicy information and just want to say it. And you know that pressure so much, you're sitting around with your friends, the other person's not there, and you're just so tempted, you just want to get it out of your system. So at that point, if you just make sabr, at that point, first of all, a person will find that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will help them, inna Allaha ma'as sabireen. And then when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will help them, if they remain patient and steadfast and make it over that hump, that pressure relieves itself. And then what you find is that you actually are satisfied. One of the best feelings that you can actually have in your life is the feeling of conquering your own self. One of the best feelings that you can experience in your life is the feeling of slaying a demon that has been haunting you for so long. One of the best feelings that a person can experience is self-actualizing their potential and being good and living a righteous life. And as a person starts to remove these sins one by one, there's an ecstasy that's associated with that. And that fills a person. That satisfies a person, not the sin. And so I said that there are certain sins that a person by tajruba knows, right, that how they felt afterwards. But then there's other ones that the sharia has told us not to run after, but sometimes a person still goes after it anyway, thinking somehow that they're going to find something over there. And really, all of those things are just like mirages in the desert. You look at youth, right? They're so caught up in their zina. You know, there's a sister, she might be thinking, oh, I'm not accepted. You know, and if I just take off my hijab, I'll have everyone's attention, and I have such pretty hair, and everyone's going to like me. First of all, they're not liking you. If it required you to take off hijab for them to like you, then they don't like you, they like your hair. Right? That's not anyone that you would want to devote any type of time towards. You want people who care about you for you. But regardless, say a person's making all these plans and said, you know, I'm just going to take off my hijab, I can't do this anymore. I'm taking off the jilbab, I can't do this anymore. I'm taking off my niqab, I can't do this anymore. And it keeps on mounting, and it gets to a point. Even though you don't know perhaps necessarily what that will feel like afterwards, you can still sit and make the fakr and try to understand what will happen when you get to the other side. And I can tell you almost across the board, whether a person is chasing mal, whether a person is chasing wealth and things in the dunya, whether a person is chasing fame, whether a person is chasing attention, whether a person is chasing a certain feeling, whether a person is chasing a certain lifestyle. You know, they want to, you know, have this very slick, elite type of lifestyle. Regardless is what it is, when you actually get there and you're sitting in that seat and you have, what's that called? When you're sitting in that seat in your room at the end of the day, and you know everyone came and gave you 5 compliments, and then you look in your hands, there's nothing there. It's just vapor. It's just, you know, smoke and mirrors. You can't hold a compliment. You can't teach it. You can't feel it. You can't smell it, and it dissipates, right? Just like the smoke into the air. And so everything that people chase for, and then what you feel afterwards is, I sacrificed so much of the deen, I sacrificed so much of my own identity, I sacrificed so much of my principles to achieve this. Oh, I wanted this job so bad, you know, I ended up compromising this, that, and the other principle. I wanted to get into medical school so bad, I stopped praying regularly for 3 months. And so what happens? You know, you get to med school, think about it, and then one day you're going to be doing a job, and people think in their mind, you know, very naively, that, you know, it might be like every day is like a day out of Grey's Anatomy or something like that. I mean, no, it's just another job. Whether you go to the auto mechanic shop or you go to the hospital, it's just another day. It's just a job, and you come home, and life remains the same. And if a person can be insightful enough to truly be able to project what the outcome of those sins are, then they really start getting to the point where they can start convincing themselves it's not something that I need to chase. And if a person, you know, has, it gives a person himma to actually get through that crucible when the desire and the pressure is so hard to actually prompting a person to do it. Then if they remember the aftermath and the consequences of that action, it helps a person deter themselves from following that path. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala make us among those people who have a long view and not people who think short term. And may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala allow that foresight and insight to become a sabab from us being deterred from sin. And if a person doesn't necessarily know, you know, what the outcome on the other side is, then fas'alu ahla dhikri in kuntum la ta'lamun, right? Ask your ulama, ask the mashayikh, ask the people who know, ask actually people who have been there. You know, I read somewhere recently that one of these very famous celebrities, you know, she was saying that every single day she contemplated suicide. I mean, these are signs for us to know that if you follow the path that you're not supposed to, you know, there was another story of, you know, another one of the youth. He had really gone to a very evil path, and he had, you know, coming from a good family and all of this, and he had really gone very far. And then when he came back, you know, one of the things that he mentioned, he's like, I just got tired of the darkness. So these stories that people coming back from the other side telling us that there's nothing there, right? They should open our eyes, and the wise person is the person who takes a lesson from that. It's like, you know, there's a lion in a cave, and he puts up a sign and he says, free food. I'm the king of the forest, and I'm going to give free food to everyone. So the first day, you know, the raccoon comes by and he says, oh my God, free food, I don't have to go and scavenge. And the king of the jungle is so generous. So he walks inside the cave, and then the lion eats him. And the next day the deer comes, right? And the next day the alligator comes. And the next day the fawn comes. And the next day a bunny comes. So each one of them gets eaten and meets their end, falling into their, falling into the hands and playing into the trick of the lion. So one day there's an owl that comes to the mouth of the cave, and then they read the sign. But then instead of just believing in the sign, they look down and they see all these footprints of different types of animals. And the only type of footsteps, they lead into the cave, but there's no footsteps that lead out. So then they understood that this is just a trick, that you can go in, but you're never going to make it out. And that's the nature of sin. It's the black hole that you go in, but it doesn't satisfy. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala save us from ma'asiyah. Wa akhiru da'wana anil hamdulillahi rabbil alameen.